Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, both pastors of Christchurch, Haywards Heath. Well, it's that time again. It's time for Ordinary Apologetics. Hold on, what does this button do? Ordinary Apologetics.
Apologetics for the ordinary.
Whoa, that's right. I made a jingle. Ordinary Apologetics gets its own jingle. Nice to have a jingle. I know the jingle's probably all you're thinking about now, but come on guys, we need to focus this week because we're talking about the cosmological argument. This episode is all about beginnings, infinities, and first causes, and we also spend a good chunk of time talking about absolutely nothing, which is one of the most interesting chats you can have, as it turns out. So get settled in for the most ordinary 30 minutes of your week, and I'll catch you on the other side.
Hi, I'm Mark Ventham.
Hello, I'm Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. This week, we've got Ordinary Apologetics, part three. And so Mark is going to assume the position of host.
Geek week.
Yeah, so that he can kind of question us, ask the difficult questions, be the skeptic, be the atheist in the room, and hopefully help us to explain really clearly this idea. Because we're talking today about the cosmological argument for God's existence. So it might get chewy, as usual, but hopefully we'll be able to do a good job of explaining with your help, Mark.
We'll try. Well, I think we've got to ask the first question, which is, what is the cosmological argument? And my next question is, when would I use it?
Okay. Do you want me to go first, Graham?
I think it'd be great if you could introduce the argument. I think it's worth saying on the way, just while you draw breath, to say the reason we're doing this is precisely to answer your second question, or to begin to answer your second question, because we think ordinary Christians should be aware of these arguments and able to at least simply point towards them. And in general, it's so not so we necessarily win an argument, but so we get rid of some obstacles that people might have to investigating Christianity because they think the idea of God is absurd or something like that. And so most of the arguments are just to kind of raise questions as to whether God, the idea of God is so absurd and to say actually it's very logical and reasonable.
Yeah, and I think the other side of it, which you've brought out before, is that it also is just very encouraging as believers, even if you don't use it every day to evangelize. I think for me personally, it's been very encouraging just to know that these arguments are even out there. So it's helpful with getting people to listen to a message about Jesus. It's also helpful in your own faith, I think, to encourage you that there is rationality and reason behind faith.
There are good reasons. We still might need to get into the when, how this argument will come about.
Definitely.
But let's go to what it is.
Yeah. Okay. So here's it's basically two premises again, just like we have with I think the moral argument, and then a conclusion that logically follows from those two ideas. Yeah. Okay. So the first idea is this: whatever begins to exist has a cause. That's premise one. Premise two is the universe began to exist. And therefore the conclusion follows the universe has a cause. So that's it. It's as simple as that. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore the universe has a cause. That is the cosmological argument.
Yeah. And although it sounds a little bit complicated, I think it's quite simple and probably better understood than the other two that we gave, in the sense that we all recognise that there's nothing that we observe that wasn't caused by something else. The only tricky bit comes to arguing whether there's just an infinite number of causes. But I think everybody recognises there's nothing that exists that didn't have a cause.
Right. So I got the argument, but now I'm thinking, yes, so what? Because all we've established is that there is a cause. But my thinking is, as Graham just said, most people accept that. So what benefit is? Because presumably then you just get into arguments about what the cause is. So the cause is therefore Big Bang. The cause is therefore evolution. We'd say the cause is creation. So that's what I'm saying. When would I use a cosmological argument? Because in one sense, okay, so you could say multiple, but how does this help me engage someone? Because I think the ordinary person in the pub would have the argument and go, yeah, no, I agree with that. But the cause is the Big Bang.
Okay, interesting. They might say that. If they were to say that, they've kind of misunderstood the argument.
Okay, so what we've misunderstood?
Well, the question would be, what caused the Big Bang? So again, we're going a step further back. Did the Big Bang come out of nothing? There was nothing, and then suddenly there was a Big Bang that was not caused by anything. Well, we're saying as Christians that that's doesn't make sense.
So what we're having to do is, what we're having to get down to then is, what do we mean by cause? We mean that you're saying there is someone who brings about the cause.
Well, we're going to get there.
Well, yeah, I think it's to do with the second premise, actually.
Yeah, this will be to do with the second premise.
The second premise is, just repeat it.
The second premise is the universe began to exist.
Yes, quite. And so I think what sometimes people don't get is that second premise, which is the universe began to exist, which is quite a strong premise, because it's not saying the universe exists. It's saying the universe began to exist, which is different than saying, because then that takes you away from the argument, there's just loads of causes and stuff. So I think the first premise is indisputable, but the second one is...
although we're gonna raise one dispute, just to be thorough. But
But this is really at a sort of popular level, disputable. Yes. But everyone kind of recognises, something hits them in the face, somebody threw it. Everyone kind of
realises
cause and effect's going on everywhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's the fact that the universe began to exist. In other words, there was a time there was nothing. And if you get philosophical debates with Josh's friend Bill Craig on...
I wish.
He has debates about nothing. And, what exactly is the definition of nothing? Because some scientists would say in terms of Big Bang, well, there wasn't actually nothing. We're just using nothing in a kind of loose way to describe the absence of the universe as we know it and all kind of material and matter. But there wasn't exactly nothing. Whereas that premise is saying that it began to exist from nothing. Yeah. And there was a moment when there was nothing.
But wouldn't, that's what I'm saying, wouldn't the ordinary non-believer agree with that premise? In the sense that they would say, yep, there was a time when the universe didn't exist and then it existed by the Big Bang. That was the cause. Okay, so the next question is, caused the Big Bang? But then the argument comes back to us. Okay, yeah, there was God. But who created God?
We will get there. Can we start a little bit earlier back? Yeah. Because you're jumping ahead. And I think if they do agree with that, then we're doing well. That's a good thing. But we will get there. But let's jump back to premise one before we get to premise two, which is that whatever begins to exist has a cause. Let's just talk about that for a few minutes and then we will get to premise two, which arguably there'll be more to say about. Yeah. Because it does seem very self-evident that premise one is correct, that whatever begins to exist has a cause of its existence. That's our experience in the world.
Yeah.
And I think Graham's right that is kind of uncontroversial. We understand cause and effect in the world. People, I think, will tend to agree with that without too much... too many problems. Now, the only scientific argument that might come back to that is that there seems to be examples on the quantum level of things popping in and out of existence, of what would be called the quantum vacuum. So that on a very fundamental level, it seems that particles can pop in and out of existence. And that's the only kind of rebuttal that could be given to this first premise, that things... generally come in, that things always come into existence with a cause. Now, the answer to that is to kind of state again Graham's point that is not in fact strictly nothing, that the quantum vacuum is emphatically something, it's not nothing. So even if it's just space, even if there is energy present, then there is something, that these particles are coming in and out of existence from something, not nothing. Nothing meaning strictly not anything. So not even an empty space, because that is something. And it's very difficult, I think, to kind of imagine what that means. Because when we think of nothing, we think of a dark space. That is something, okay? So you've got to clear your mind of that. That is something. We're talking about nothing at all. No space, no time, nothing, no properties whatsoever. And the argument is that nothing can come out of nothing.
Yeah, because you might think of nothing as, if you take it as some simple level, you get a jar and there's nothing in that jar, and you say, well, that's nothing. And then someone says, well, but there's still air in it. Mm. So you say, well, I'll take the air out of it. Well, is there nothing in that jar now? So that you might say, well, there's still light in it. And so then you put it in a dark room and say, is there absolutely nothing? Well, there's still space. Mm-hmm. So it's that point that the everything that exists has a cause, that something caused that to be there. And so, that is the argument. I don't know where I was going with that. I got a little bit lost. I was thinking about quantum mechanics and empty jars and trying to work out, okay, what would I do next with this jar?
I think the point is, though, Mark, that like, it is self-evidently true. So that's why you moved on to premise two. But I still think it's worth us kind of working that through, that first premise, and just backing it up a little bit rather than just assuming it to be true, even though I think that one can safely assume it to be true.
But I do think people short circuit, like you just did, to if you're your person in the coffee shop or the pub or person you're chatting to at home, if you say there's cause and effect throughout the universe, they probably will short circuit to jumping to, okay, so who made God, or arguments like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's trying to row them back from that first of all and kind of work through it a little bit more logically.
But this is helpful, because what we're actually saying is what we need to do when we're engaging with folks is build block by block.
Yeah.
Because often people get to the end answer because they've heard those kind of answers. But what we need to do is help them to come back, because what you're trying to do is unpick the thinking to help them understand actually that what they're building on there, what the premise they've come with, has actually no foundation. That's what we're saying.
Exactly,
so what we're trying to do is then build the premises block by block in order to build a solid foundation, in order to have a clearer understanding of what's going on.
Yeah.
So partly, as always in our apologetics, you want to understand people's presuppositions, what they're understanding and thinking, mm-hmm. and often people have a presupposition but haven't got the foundation behind it. And actually, what you want to do is unpick that and then build back up.
Yeah, that's exactly what we want to do. So that's premise one. I think it's quite self-evidently true. It's our experience that is true. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. So then we move to premise two, that the universe began to exist. And here is where there's going to be more conversation about infinity and about first causes and things like that. So we'll get into that, shall we? One of the first problems that we're going to run into, or first counter-arguments, is going to be, can't there just be an infinite universe? So we're going to have some philosophical reasons to doubt that that's possible. Do you want to speak about that a little bit, Graham, or do you want me to carry on with Hilbert's Hotel?
Well, no, yeah, by all means, but I suppose the philosophical arguments are to do with whether it's logically reasonable for there to be either an infinite universe or an infinite number of causes and effects. I worked out, by the way, why I stopped dead in my tracks to do with the jar, because it wasn't so much an argument for things beginning to exist. It was an argument for the nothing point that I was making earlier about scientists not saying nothing. So just to join that up, if you're listening and still frowning at where was he going, that's where I was going with the scientists end up with nothing, but it's not really nothing. But so the philosophical arguments are to do with the fact that people might say quite sort of lazily, well, you just have an infinite number of causes and effects, and it just goes on forever, because like the universe goes on forever. So what are some of the philosophical arguments against that idea that infinity goes on forever, or that infinity even exists?
Yeah, so this is where we're going to start to talk about the idea of an actual infinite set of anything, an actual infinite number, cannot logically exist, because it leads to all kinds of inconsistencies and absurdities. So the idea of a possible infinite is okay. We haven't got a problem with a possible infinite, but an actual infinite number leads to inconsistency, absurdity, and illogical outcomes. Okay, so that our argument is going to be that the universe can't possibly be infinite. There can't be cause after cause after cause after cause, event after event preceding event forever, because that will lead to lots of inconsistency and absurdity. And what we'll do now is give an illustration of that absurdity with this idea called Hilbert's Hotel.
Okay,
so it's an illustration of how this works. So what you've got to do is imagine a hotel that has infinite rooms.
Okay.
And I want you to imagine that every single room in this hotel is full, is booked, and there's somebody in it. Okay?
Okay.
Now imagine that one more person walks through the lobby, goes up to the front desk and says, I'd like to stay, please. And the manager says, no problem. And he moves person one in room one to room two, and person in room two to room three, and so on and so on and so on, so that room one is freed up. And he puts the person that came through the doors in room one. That seems to be possible because there's an infinite number of rooms. And yet we said every room was full. So what we get there is an inconsistency and an absurdity. Both seem to be true and yet can't be true at the same time. So that's to try and demonstrate the fact that an actual infinite set leads to absurdity. Another way to think about it, another illustration, because I know that's kind of dense.
Man, it's just mind-boggling when you stop to try and think why those process through. Yeah.
Imagine a person, you walk up to a person in the street and they're counting down 3, 2, 1, 0. And they say, oh, I've just been counting down from infinity. I've been counting down for eternity from infinity. And I've just reached 0 today. You would be within your rights to say, well, you've had infinite time to do that. So how come you didn't do it already? How come you didn't do it yesterday? And yet he's been counting for infinity, for eternity, from infinity, for eternity. It doesn't make sense because it's the idea of an actual infinite is absurd. Does that make sense to everybody in the room?
Makes sense to me because I've looked at it a few times.
Are we saying, therefore, infinite cannot exist?
Yes.
Correct. Infinity in that sense, infinity in the sense of an infinite number of real
things. In terms of actually the sense of being a complete infinity. Mm-hmm.
That's not the same as saying eternity doesn't exist, because that's something outside of space
but
and time.
But isn't mathematically
God living forever?
There is an infinite number. When they say they have the special eight on the side, the kind of...
Yeah, it's just a mathematical construction, though, that helps us solve equations. Mm. Not the same as something that we ever have to prove exists.
So what we're saying
is... It's a bit like imaginary numbers, if you come across those.
It's almost like an imaginary
negative numbers, that you, like minus one squared is an imaginary number because it doesn't really exist, but it helps you solve equations.
It's not my world. Mathematical equations and imaginary numbers.
But it's just making the point, though, that there's... There's stuff in maths that helps you solve things.
Right.
But they don't really exist.
Rather than they actually exist. Right. That's helpful.
Quite simply, imagine that the universe did go on infinitely in the past. How would we have ever got to today if we had infinite time to cross to reach today? We never would. And yet we're here.
Okay.
So it suggests that, no, it's not infinite in the past, but there was an actual beginning point. There was a starting point that allows us to progress to today. If we have an infinite amount of time to traverse, we'll never, in fact, get to now.
Because we'll just be floating. Because
it's infinite. Right. Yeah. So it's very, it's big kind of metaphysical thoughts about infinity and time, and it's difficult to grasp. But the fundamental idea is that an actual infinite number of anything can't exist. Therefore, the universe cannot have existed infinitely into the past.
Just to have it right, so I get it. I'm just conscious, like, you two are apologetic geeks. You love this stuff, right? But how many people in the pub are actually thinking about infinity or imaginary numbers or any of that? In other words, when it comes to my second question, we started right. When would I use this?
Uh-huh.
You know, or do I need to have more of the argument first?
But even if you just said, you can check this out for yourself, but infinity doesn't really exist.
And would most
it's just
worldly
a mathematical construction.
Philosophers, mathematicians agree with that?
Yeah, yes. I mean, it would be argued back and forth.
But there would be, what I'm saying is, would there be those in the world who are scientists, philosophers, whatever, who would say, no, infinity does exist. There is.
Yes, there would be.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And their argument would essentially be that, yes, infinity is absurd, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So they would claim that it's just something that we can't understand and it doesn't behave in ways that we can understand or articulate, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So they would argue back on that, some of them. Many others wouldn't argue back on it. So there would be disagreement about that within the
non-believing. They might say something like, it doesn't really matter, or we don't understand infinity, but there's lots of things we don't understand yet. So I think you could have sort of that argument.
But so in terms of the beginning, but let's get back to our argument. So so we are saying everything has a beginning.
Yes. We're saying the universe began to exist.
Because
we've given one argument.
Cannot exist. Right. It's absurd.
Yeah, so we've given one argument for why the universe began
must
to
begin
exist.
Because affinity is absurd.
Right, that's so that's argument. One argument, and that's a philosophical argument. But there are two further scientific arguments that are really worth giving here that also support the idea that the universe began to exist. And they'll come from the ideas of redshift and the second law of thermodynamics. So I'm going to let Graham talk about at least one of them. You can choose.
You do the redshift one.
Okay.
Seriously, this sounds made up.
All right, you start with thermodynamics and then I'll do redshift because I've been talking for ages.
Yeah. The thermodynamic thing is that in the universe that we know, everything is moving from order to disorder, which in practice means everything is actually breaking down in some way, going more towards heat. If you think about energy generally, it can go through various forms, but the kind of lowest form of it is heat. And so actually our whole universe is turning more and more to heat. If you imagine, you know, the sun burning up and everything, the sun burning as it does, it's that's the kind of last stage of life is the heat bit, because there's nothing else after that. And so it means that the universe had to have started with complete order and is over time breaking down to disorder. You know, those sort of gloom merchants would say, okay, in billions of years, actually the universe will just die out because everything will turn to heat, and that's all there is, and there'll be nothing left. There'll be nothing constructed, no elements altogether anymore. So that suggests very strongly that there was a point where there was complete order and just everything's moving more and more to disorder.
Mm. No.
Everything's going to heat.
Okay.
Let's do your redshift.
Okay, so second law of thermodynamics.
It sounds like Red Dwarf to me. That's what I'm thinking of when you say redshift.
I think I'm on an episode of Red Dwarf.
Things are going from order to disorder. There's one analogy, I think, which is useful, an illustration, which is the kind of ink drop in a glass of water, where if you were to drop some red ink into a clear glass of water, it would start with complete order, where the ink is separated entirely from the water. Then, over time, it would dissipate throughout the water until equilibrium is reached, and that is entropy. It's going from a state of complete order to disorder, and that is what's happening in a grand scale in the universe. We see disorder emerging from a state of order, and the point that Graham's making is if you rewind the clock, if we're seeing disorder now, that's what we're observing, we're seeing it continually become less and less ordered. If you rewind that, you're going to come back to a singularity, a point where it is completely ordered. That means a beginning point. Doesn't infinitely go back into the past, infinitely more and more ordered. It reaches a point, a singularity. And redshift is kind of a similar idea. So redshift is simply the observation that if you look into deep space, the colour of light is red. It turns to more of a shade of red, which is an indication that it's being stretched, which is telling us that the universe is in fact expanding. That's what redshift is telling us. That's the observation from science. So, again, same exact principle that we did with thermodynamics. If you rewind that clock, it will start shrinking back in on itself and come to a singularity. Okay? So it can't infinitely shrink into the past because it will reach a point where there is a space-time singularity, a point where it started. So redshift, the universe expanding, and the second law of thermodynamics, order going to disorder, those observations strongly point to the fact that the universe actually had a beginning a finite time ago in the past, that it didn't infinitely exist, but that it actually came into existence.
And we as believers would say that was created by God at that point. But I can imagine a non-believer saying, yeah, I can agree with all that. But as I said earlier, they're just going to give that cause to something different. So so they may just say, well, yeah, there's a cause. Maybe it was Mother Nature. Maybe, you know, evolution. Yeah. Maybe it was Big Bang. But they're happy with the cause, but it doesn't get me to, okay, yeah, but God created was the cause.
Well, let's talk about what kind of cause we require then for this to happen. Okay,
That's a good question.
Here we go. What kind of characteristics is this cause going to have? Well, it's going to have to be immaterial because it's before all material. It brings material into existence, so it has to be immaterial. It has to be spaceless because it's not in space. It's before space. It created space, so it's spaceless. It needs to be timeless because it creates time. It's before time. It has to be incredibly powerful to be able to bring these things into existence. So far we have immaterial, timeless, spaceless, incredibly powerful. And lastly, it has to have a will. It has to have the will to do something. Why? Because causes create effects as soon as those causes exist. They don't have the choice to bring about their effect. As soon as there is a cause, there is an effect. Whereas with God, or with this cause, it had to have the choice to bring something into existence. So this kind of cause needs a will. It needs a will. And the only thing that we can possibly think about with all those characteristics is, we would argue as Christians, an unembodied mind. Immaterial, spaceless, timeless, incredibly powerful, with a will. Personal, another way to say that last one, personal. Mm. A mind, an unembodied mind. And that is the kind of cause we need, because it needs to have all those characteristics. So if someone said, well, evolution, well, hang on a second, it doesn't fulfill any one of those characteristics, so it can't be the cause. I mean, also, it's plain and simple, evolution happens after the fact. Evolution happens after we've got stuff. It doesn't create the stuff. If you say the Big Bang, what you're essentially saying is the universe created itself, because the Big Bang is the universe coming into existence. So you're saying the universe caused the universe, which is self-defeating, because the universe would have to exist to cause itself. So that doesn't work.
So I think that's brilliant. You wrote it down, Mark, because you obviously thought it was brilliant too. But that idea, obviously it doesn't get us to the Christian God. It just gets us to God. But it gets us a long way.
I was going to say, friends, that's how you do it. But all you're doing is one, with apologetics, we said this before, you're just trying to put a stone in the shoe.
Yeah.
You're just getting people to think. So the next time someone says to you, oh, yeah, no, the world was created by the Big Bang, hey, here's an opportunity to use the cosmological argument. Or someone says, actually, the world was created by evolution. Oh, hold on a second. Let's talk about the cosmological argument and then walk people through these very premises. Mm-hmm. And or you can just say, let's listen to the podcast together and then let's talk about it.
And if people say the question, who made God then? The answer to say that the universe has to have an uncaused cause that is spaceless, timeless, personal.
Incredibly powerful.
Incredibly powerful and so forth. That has to be so for the universe to exist. So it's what John Lennox calls a category error in asking who made God, because there has to be an ultimate uncaused cause. So the universe has a cause. God is the ultimate uncaused cause. I have one little point to make before we completely run out of time, which is in the same way that there are Christian artists writing about all kinds of stuff, Lion of Judah should really write songs about all these arguments, apologetic arguments we're raising. So there's a whole seam of questions, of songs you could write answering those kind of questions.
That's true.
Flanders and Swan had one about the first law of dynamics. It's heat. Heat can't pass from a colder to a hotter. You can try it if you like, but you really ought to notter.
Oh, brilliant.
That's for the first law of
dynamics. Okay.
So if you just need one for the second law and all those kind of things. So make up some songs.
Thanks, as always, for listening to this episode of Ordinary. I've got to go now, because I've got to go write a song about the second law of thermodynamics. So that should be a hit. As always, we'd encourage you to subscribe to Ordinary so that you don't miss out on future podcasts. And please do share it with your friends or family if you think they'd be interested. Got lots of exciting things coming up, different topics and guests on the podcast. We'll spend a bit of time at the beginning of the next episode telling you who we've got coming on the podcast. And of course, there'll be more episodes of your favourite
apologetics. Apologetics for the ordinary.
Just an excuse to play the jingle again, really. Catch you next time. Thank you.